Magandang hapon sa ating lahat. Cesar's Vengeance, Rizal and the Mother of All Insurgencies by Epifanio San Juan Jr. In the now classic treatise, The Origin of the Family, Private Property, and the State, Frederick Engels formulated a cardinal insight that the inequality of the sexes coincided with the rise of class society. The overthrow of mother right was the world historical defeat of the female sex. Within the patriarchal monogamous family based on private property, Engels adds, quote, "The woman was degraded and reduced to servitude. She became the slave of his lust and a mere instrument for the production of children." Unquote. Women were relegated to the private sphere of the kitchen and the boudoir under the male authority. Historically, the form of patriarchal state is a result of the class contradictions prevailing at a particular stage of social development, from savagery to slave, feudal, and capitalist stages. The anthropologist Robert Briffault noted that with the institutionalization of the monogamous marriage and the nuclear family as the chief economic unit, the supremacy of the male became normative, the male head of the household production with property holding rights and the privilege of disposing of surplus wealth displaced the female in the care of domestic arts and agriculture. Chiefly responsible for the tightly woven communal relationships, women lost their equal share in productive tasks, and with it that source of solidarity, gutted by the rise of competitive interests, by commodity fetishism, and the cash nexus. The fate of Maria Clara at the end of the Noli encapsulates the loss of status of women of the emerging Principalia, and of the more intense pacification of her lesser sisters in the symbolic ideological template of colonial society. Within this historical materialist framework, we can properly appreciate Rizal's works as articulations of a synthesizing theoretical inquiry in which the form of universality springs from the concrete singularity of particular life worlds. Aesthetically, they render typical what are specific and individual. The predicament of Maria Clara, Sisa, Salome, Juli, Doña Consolacion, and other characters in Rizal's novels becomes emblematic of the decaying colonial order of the 19th century Philippines. In depicting the physiognomies and symptomatic acts of his female protagonists, Rizal also presented a lucid anatomy of the body politic, the diseased corpus for which he was imploring his audience to suggest a cure. In short, the key to understanding Rizal's revolutionary critique of colonial society may be found in his realistic allegorical delineation of women in his fiction and discourse. By symbolic extrapolation, Rizal shows how patriarchal supremacy, founded on the control of women's bodies and their productivity, becomes the ultimate weak link in the colonial class hierarchy, the toxic vestiges of which still afflict us today. Epitomized by the Catholic bishop's opposition to the Comprehensive Reproductive Rights Bill being proposed in the Philippine Congress. Witnesses to emergencies. By the time Rizal was born in 1861, the predominantly feudal tributary mode of production was already moribund and an obstacle to further socio-economic development. Trade and commerce expanded when the country was open to foreign shipping in 1834 to 1865, especially after the completion of the Suez Canal in 1869. While the islands, for the most part, remained tribal and rural under the grip of the rent-collecting phylocracy and its subaltern principalia, land-tilling families such as those of Rizal flourished within the limits of the colonial order. Power was monopolized by the peninsulares in the bureaucracy and military, together with the religious orders. They controlled large estates and appropriated the social wealth produced by the majority population of workers and peasants, most of whom were coerced under law, for example, polo servicios, and reduced to slavish penury. Ruthless pauperization also doomed indigenous folk deprived of access to public lands, animals, craft, tools, and so on. Only a tiny minority of Creoles and children of mixed marriages, mestizos of Chinese descent, were allowed to prosper under precarious, serf-like, and often humiliating conditions that eventually drove them to covert an open rebellion. Rizal was one of these children sprung from the conjuncture of contradictory modes of production and reproduction of social relations, as a child responding to the sharpening crisis of the battered Spanish Empire. Rizal's family belonged to the Principalia, town aristocracy. His parents owned a large, sumptuous stone house and adjacent property. Their wealth derived from cultivating rented land owned by the Dominican Order, which later expelled them from refusal to accede to a rental increase and other impositions. Rizal's mother managed a store and operated a flour mill and ham press. The parents traced their lineage to merchants and provincial officials with affluent Chinese petty bourgeois provenance. With a private library of more than 1,000 volumes, the Rizals, of 11 children, 9 were women, enjoyed a relatively privileged rank among the native gents or clan establishment. Compared to his muted respect for his father, Rizal esteemed his mother in a more expressive and exuberant way. "My mother is a woman of more than ordinary culture. She knows literature and speaks Spanish better than I. She corrected my poems and gave me good advice when I was studying rhetoric. She is a mathematician and has read many books." Later on, in an 1884 letter copied by Leonora Rivera, Rizal's mother would advise him not to meddle in things that will distress me, congratulating him on his graduation. Quote, "I'm thanking our Lord for having bestowed on you an intelligence surpassing that of others," unquote. But she wryly cautions him not to be too wise. Quote, "If he gets to know more, the Spaniards will cut off his head," unquote. Confident and proud of his accomplishments at the Ateneo and in Europe, Rizal set the warning aside. No doubt Rizal worshipped his mother. Consequently, when she was suspected by Calamba's gobernadorcillo and Guardia de Civiles to the cruel punishment of walking from Calamba to Santa Cruz, a distance of 50 kilometers on a charge that was never substantiated, Rizal suffered an incalculably profound trauma. It was a deeply painful wound that disturbed him enough to motivate him to condemn, to quote his rationale for writing his novels, quote, "our culpable and shameful complacence with existing miseries," unquote, and, quote, "to wake from slumber the spirit of the fatherland," unquote. The mother's ordeal served as the primal scenario of violation, the initiation into the crucible of his life's pilgrimage. Rizal was then only 11 years old when his mother was arrested on a malicious charge. She and her brother Jose Alberto, a rich Diñan ilustrado, were accused of trying to poison the latter's wife, who abandoned his home and children when the husband was on a business trip in Europe. It was Teodora Alonso, Rizal's mother, who persuaded the brother to forgive his wife's infidelity, to no avail. She connived with a Spanish lieutenant of the Guardia Civil to file a case in court accusing her husband and Doña Teodora of trying to kill her. Rizal's recounting of the disaster does not wholly capture the impact of this disaster on the adolescent's psyche. Quote, "The mayor treated my mother with contempt, not to say brutality, afterward forcing her to admit what they wanted her to admit, promising that she would be set free and reunited with her children if she said what they wanted her to say. My mother was like all mothers, deceived and terrorized," unquote. Rizal visited her in prison. She endured the unjust imprisonment for 2.5 years. With his brother also suspected of complicity with Father Jose Burgos, executed with Gomez and Zamora for sedition, Rizal summed up the effect of the two events, quote, "From then on, while still a child, I lost confidence in friendship and mistrusted my fellow men," unquote. Leon Maria Guerrero rightly appraised this unbearable tragedy of his mother as the key experience that Rizal could not face except through anonymous student diary we quoted. He grappled with it through the catharsis of a public grievance, the 1872 martyrdom of the 3 secular priests which tormented his brother Pasiano. Quote, "Not so agonizing or so personal as his beloved mother's shame, shamefully imprisoned, unfairly tried, and unjustly condemned." Deciphering Eve's stigmata. To resolve the trauma, Rizal invented female characters whose struggles sublated his mother's experience. Cisa's plight may be read as Rizal's attempt to confront the violation of his mother's honor by indirection and to redress the grievance. But one apprehends an excess in the narrative more obsessive than melodramatic, more exorbitant than the rhetorical pity and fear evoked by Aristotelian tragedy. In chapter 21 of the Noli, the Guardia Civils arrest Cisa as, quote, "mother of thieves," unquote, blaming her for her children's actions. The mother is thus made answerable and responsible for her sons, not the delinquent father. Cisa's walk to the barracks is Rizal's reenactment of his mother's torture, an unforgivable outrage. It was not just an empathetic reliving of the mother's agony but a mimetic performance of the ordeal. This actualization may be construed as a therapeutic effort to assuage the compulsion to repeat the past. Cisa's intense shame attests to the power of gendered socialization, primarily mediated through the family and the church apparatus, as Rizal would argue in his letter to the Malolos women. But Cisa's sense of honor testifies to an inherent dignity, an impregnable self-respect, qualities he recommends for Filipino women to acquire. Cisa's torment accelerates when this dweller on the fringes beyond the scope of the church bell's tolling approaches the town. Quote, she was seized with terror. She looked in anguish around her. Vast rice fields, a small irrigation canal, thin trees. There was not a precipice or a boulder in sight against which she could smash herself. Unquote. Cisa then becomes suicidal as the urban space engulfs her. Alienated from the urban circuit of money and commodity exchange, she is terrified by the signs of civilization. Inwardly, she vows to her son that they will withdraw farther into the depths of the forest. When she reminds the soldiers that they have entered the town, Rizal's discourse becomes abstract, generalized, imposing rhetorical distance. Quote, her tone could not be defined. It was a lament, reproach, complaint. It was a prayer, pain, and grief condensed into sounds. Unquote. Inside the barracks, quote, she was convulsed with bitter sobbing, a dry sobbing that was tearless and without words, unquote. Literary artifice becomes impotent here to transcribe maternal anguish, the music of the pre-Oedipal Cora. Cisa now resembles an animal, sensuous practice suspended in defensive pathos. Before she was released by the alferes, who was at the loggerheads with the friars, Cisa passed 2 hours in a state of semi-imbecility, huddled in a corner head, hidden between her hands, hair disheveled and in disarray. She was summarily thrown out of the barracks, quote, almost forced out because she was too stunned to move, unquote. She is a non-entity to the alferes, consigned to the domain of inert objects and beasts. What happens subsequently is Cisa's transformation into the voice of nature, the sentient environment of rural Philippines. Conversely, it is the humanization of the stigmatized territory customarily identified with the cultural ambience of savagery and barbarism, with bandits or tulisanes, with outlaws, pagans, and vagrant lunatics. With Cisa, however, Rizal describes the process of dehumanization / naturalization, beginning with her calling for her sons upon arrival at her hut, searching her surroundings. Quote, her eyes wandered with a sinister expression. They would brighten up now and then with a strange light. Then they would darken like the skies during a stormy night. One can almost say that the light of reason was ebbing close to extinction, unquote. She wandered, quote, screaming or howling strange sounds. Her voice had a strange quality, unlike the sound produced by human vocal cords, unquote. Rizal deprives her of human language and endows her with the more indefinitely varied sounds of the elements. The next day, defying the narrator's wish that, quote, some kindly angel wing would blot out from her features and memory the ravages of suffering, unquote, and that Mother Providence would intervene during her sleep, quote, Cisa wandered aimlessly, smiling, singing or talking, communing with all of nature's creation, unquote, except her fellow humans. In Rizal's powerful dramatization, Cisa commands a reservoir of psychic energy not found in the other female protagonists. It is not found in Huli, Cabezang Palace's daughter, whose labor power had to be alienated when her father joins the outlaws. As though reliving the traumatic ordeal of Rizal's mother, the narrative voice describes Huli's walk to the convent accompanied by Sister Bali. Quote, she thought the whole world was looking at her and pointing a finger at her, unquote. Overwhelmed with terror, she resisted Sister Bali's urging, quote, pale her features contorted. Her look seemed to say that she saw death before her. Frightened by the prospect of her lover Basilio's exile with wrath and despair, Huli closed her eyes so as not to see the abyss into which she was going to hurl herself. The desperate assertion of her freedom, a stoic defiance of women's enslavement. One can infer a general rule from this incident. When the family's patriarch can no longer protect the household with the separation of the worker from the means of production / subsistence, the daughter becomes a prey for the lecherous power in the convent. Pushed to the extreme, Huli preserved her dignity, her chastity, in her legal escape from that profanation emanating from the sacred house of God's ministers. This anticipates Maria Clara's prison of Santa Clara in Intramuros at the close of the Noli, from which the only escape is madness or enigmatic silence and disappearance by the carceral discipline of a decadent obscurantist institution. The pathos of excommunicating truth. In contrast to Huli, Sisa is caught in a severe contradiction. She cannot kill herself because her sons need her. The maternal instinct compels communication with other victims. In the latter part of the Noli, we encounter Sisa again on the eve of the San Diego Town Festival when Maria Clara and her relatives confront the leper, a blind man, quote, singing the romance of the fishes, unquote. Art and reality collide. The blind singer allegedly contracted leprosy by taking care of his mother. Rizal dilates on this episode of the leper who, like Sisa, uttered, quote, strange, incomprehensible sounds, unquote. When Sisa approached the leper, sunk to his knees, thanking Maria Clara for the spontaneous gift of her locket, what Rizal calls a rare spectacle, dramatized here incorporates that germ of a universal principle growing out of the historically specific life world of women in that reactionary milieu. It is the negated principle of women's decisive function in reproduction, nurturance, and production of subsistence without a regime of gender equality is impossible. This particular scene speaks volumes on the themes of justice, equality, egalitarian and participatory democracy, ecumenical peace, and ecological survival, whose nuanced ramifications we cannot spell and analyze here. Notice the multi-layered implications of the mad mother exhorting the blind leper to pray for the living on the day of the dead. This gesture of reconciling or searching incompatibles punctuated by the clamor of normal spectators to separate the two victims. Of the various thematic strands and motives woven in this network, I will only stress three. As he felt her contact, the leper cried out and jumped up. But the madwoman held on to his arm to the great horror of the bystanders and said to him, "Let us pray. Today is the day of the dead. Those lights are the life of men. Let us pray for my sons. Separate them. The madwoman will get contaminated." The crowd was shouting, but no one dared to approach them. "Do you see the light from the tower? That is my son Basilio, who comes down by a rope. Do you see that one from the convent? That is my son Crispin. But I am not going to see them because the priest is sick and has many coins of gold and the coins got lost. Let us pray. Let us pray for the soul of the priest. I brought him amargoso and sarsalidas. My garden was full of flowers and I had sons. I had a garden, I was taking care of flowers, and I had two sons." Of the various thematic sounds and motives woven in this network, I will only stress three. Number one, the horticultural stage of social production alluded two recalls the stage of matrilineal, matrilocal setup in primitive society, a time when the communal household enabled the reciprocal division of labor between the sexes. Notice the absence of Sisa's husband and her supervision of the household and her subsistence obtained from working the land. Number two, the parasitic excess of mercantile economy centered on coinage extracted by friars, thus combining religious ideology and trade or commerce, monopolized by a theocratic state and a phrylocracy whose mercenary use of religion demystifies their legitimacy in purveying the mystical and magical. And finally, third, the contamination, contagion of an alienated society, misrecognized but actually lived by the people who called for the separation of the physically deceased and the physically abnormal, both appendages of a cancerous body politic. We cannot help but register the behavior of the crowd as cynical, callous, and hypocritical. The spectacle manifests a further irony inscribed in the fact that the living have mortgaged their destinies to the dead. Indeed, one can say that the dead father's tradition, fetishized rituals, idolized metals and commodities have taken over. Aside from taxes and governmental levies on ordinary citizens, the selling of indulgences and other sacramental fees and tributes collected by the church demonstrates pervasive corruption. In the last chapter, taking place on Christmas Eve, Basilio catches up with his deranged mother. Finally, she recognizes him and is briefly restored to normalcy, only to die and be consumed in a funeral pyre together with the fugitive Elias. Phoenix-like, Sisa's motherhood is affirmed only to be dialectically canceled and preserved or sublated into the predicament of other surrogates and avatars. Melchora Aquino, Salud Algabre, Felipa Kulala, Maria Lorena Barros, Cherit Dairit, Luisa Posa Dominado, Kimberly Jewel Luna, and other militants in the National Democratic Insurgency. We still labor under the sharpening crisis of the Imperial Fathers and their native acolytes, alarmed by the resurgent nationalism of fiery women warriors, exorcising the two-faced Goliath. We need not linger over the semantic and philosophical complexities of other episodes where Sisa intrudes. Suffice it to mention here the scene in Chapter 40 where Doña Consolacion, the alferez's crazed wife, tortures Sisa, or in other episodes where Sisa's seemingly gratuitous appearances at the margin of festivities disrupt the custodian trappings and ceremonies of the respectable. As an antithesis to the maternal archetype, Doña Consolacion may be interpreted as the wicked half of the ambiguous duality of the mythical pair, Demeter, Persephone, the Laura, Frelida duality in Francisco Balagtas Awit, or Kali, the Indian goddess of fertility and destruction. Alterity operates within the gender dichotomy as in all socially constructed identity. Doña Consolacion is a modified specimen of the genre, isolated and frustrated. Forbidden from participating in the festival, quote, she saturated herself in her own bile, unquote, ready to unleash repressed energies on anyone in sight. We confront again the archaic furies hounding the perpetrators and apologists of matricide. Rizal amplifies her Medusa-like malignance in a way complementary to the Sisa's unnatural look. Quote, her eyes glittered like a serpent's caught and about to be crushed underfoot. They were cold, luminous, piercing, akin to something slimy, filthy, and cruel, unquote. Is this the sensitive, devout Rizal, repulsed by the loathsome aspect of the sinful Eve, the mesmerizing siren and wily temptress of myth and fable? Her unrelenting brutality towards Sisa, who was reduced to an animal emitting howling sounds, can perhaps be understood as a release of dammed-up resentment against her husband. But what enables her to do this is her sharing the alferez's status evident in her taunt, quote, cursed be the mother who gave you birth, unquote. With equal fury, Doña Consolacion attacks her husband, blaming him for not allowing her to, quote, fulfill my duties toward God, unquote. This episode is a hilarious vaudeville of marital conflict and its reverberating tensions as evinced in the case of Uncle Alberto. Rizal satirized local mores and manners with gusto, somewhat diverting us from the real target of the degradation of both sexes. But the power of Rizal's critique ultimately inhered in the grasp of the totality of social relations, which subsumed the economic structures sutured to the racializing ideology and institutional practices of Spanish colonial power. What is true and real in the lived experiences of Rizal's characters, as well as his contemporaries, acquire meaning and significance only within the context of the historical totality in the dynamic sequence of the past, moving to the present and future in the 19th century Philippines. The patriarchal age might be coming to an end, as Rizal once intoned, but its repressive legacy endured up to his death and after. Doña Consolacion and her benign counterparts such as Paulita Gomez and Doña Victorina may be Rizal's strategy of thwarting feminist protest. After all, not all women conform to the Maria Clara / Leonor Rivera model. Early experiences involving Consuelo Ortigas, Leonor Valenzuela, Segunda Katigbak, the anonymous older L of an adjacent village, not to mention the unstinting solicitude of his mother and sisters throughout of his life, all offered Rizal comfort and affirmation of his virility in one degree or another. None threatened him. So whence the need to invent a nasty, violent female protagonist as to guarantee displaying her irrational fury and then neutralizing her by parody and caricature so as to guarantee our safety from her claims to rational judgment? Why exhibit women's aggressive capacity, her destructive potential? Why the need to exorcise the derelict, malevolent wife of Uncle Alberto, if not to purge the devastating trauma of her mother's torture? Unrequited love cannot justify any suspicion of Rizal's chauvinism. With Segunda Katigbak, it was Rizal's internal schism that prevailed. Quote, but the critical moments of my life, I have always acted against my heart's desire, obeying contradictory purposes and powerful doubts. Unquote. That crisis occurred in December 1881, 6 years before his engagement with Leonore Vera was annulled by her parents, who could dispose of their daughter's body without consulting her. Even though he enjoyed Nellie Bosted's company, among others, and succumbed to the Osei-san's insidious charm, addressing her in his diary, Rizal confessed that, quote, "No woman like you has ever loved me. No woman like you has ever sacrificed for me," unquote. Not even his mother or his fiancée. Rizal confessed that he almost grew mad when he lost Leonor. It was the, quote, "first sledgehammer blow," unquote, of the railway construction that fell on him. The British engineer Keeping was a free man. Rizal was not. What was the lesson? It was not just another male replacing him. It was burgered citizen of the imperial metropole trouncing the Indio subaltern from the contest of a conjugal partner. It was industrial capitalism blasting the ethnic walls of empire, only to sustain the patriarchal domination of women's bodies. Leonore Vera died on August 28, 1893, while in exile in Dapitan. Rizal met Josephine Bracken, a Eurasian orphan from Hong Kong, Asia's burgeoning commercial center, in February 1895, with whom he fell in love. In March 1895, he wrote his mother to extend hospitality to Josephine and treat her as a person, quote, "whom I hold in great esteem and regard and whom I should not like to see exposed and abandoned," unquote. This, quote, "errant swallow," unquote, promised refuge from a hostile world, but she also functioned as an opportunity to reaffirm his manhood years before the time he could sacrifice his life to the object of his life's mission, decolonizing Patria. The Epistle of the Women of Malolos. Teaching and learning for Rizal as scholar-researcher in history and ethnology are indivisibly fused in his role as committed public intellectual. Study collective learning is part of emancipatory praxis which connects human agency and the ecosystem, as Marx implied in his thesis on Feuerbach. Quote, "The coincidence of the changing of circumstances of human activity can be conceived and rationally understood only as revolutionizing practice," unquote. His now famous letter to the young women of Malolos, dated February 22, 1889, was elicited by the chief propagandist expatriate Marcelo H. Del Pilar, while Rizal was preoccupied with annotating Morga's chronicles in the British Museum in London and answering the critics of the Noli. It was deliberately written in Tagalog at the time when he was also preparing his first article for the reformist journal La Solidaridad, entitled Los Agricultores Filipinos. That intervention may be compared to Karl Marx's two contributions to the Reinicke Zeitung on the law against thefts of timber and on the destitution of the Moselle wine growers. In Rizal's inquiry into the backward conditions of the Filipino farmers, he deplored how the farmer capitalists had to battle not only floods and locusts, but also petty tyrannical officials, the constable of civil guards, and the bureaucrats of court and the provincial government. Already equipped with an astute comprehension of the social relations of production, the political economy of the Spanish colony, Rizal this time focused his critique on the efficacy of the ideological apparatus in sustaining the unrelieved subjugation of the natives, in particular the disciplinary subalternization of women, whom he considered crucial in the formation of children's personality and disposition. In revisiting Rizal's militant propagation of a historical materialist critique of society through his novels and various discourses, Contra Constantino and Vulgar Marxists, we can appreciate his singular contribution to humankind's revolutionary archive, whatever his other limitations given the circumstances and contingencies of his personal situation and the state of the world in the latter part of the 19th century. The central burden of Rizal's letter is the critique of religion, more exactly, its practice of idolatry and attendant fanaticism, which violates saintliness defined as obedience to the dictates of reason. Thus, he bewails servitude and blind submission to any unjust order, since each person can use a God-given reason and will to distinguish the just from the unjust. Positing the radical premise of all humans being born free with no right to subjugate the will and spirit of another, Rizal urges the use of reason or rational judgments in all activities, not just in learning Spanish, which for the Malolos women was really a pretext to have access to the guidance of Teodoro Sandico, Rizal's progressive compatriot, whom they wanted as teacher. Was it lamentable for Rizal? Was it lamentable for Rizal is the Filipino women's failure to be good mothers due to their profligate addiction to gambling, their subservience to mercenary friars, their zealotry in conforming to reified rituals, and their complacent ignorance? Quote, what sons will she have but acolytes, priests, servants, or cockfighters? Unquote. Cisa's gambling husband and her two sons in the convent loom in the background. In suggesting that mothers replace the friars as the fountainhead of moral guidance in the family, Rizal valorizes the agency of mothers as educative formative forces primarily responsible for shaping the character of their children. Quote, you are the first to influence the consciousness of man. Awaken and prepare the will of our children towards all that is honorable, judged by proper standards, to all that is sincere and firm of purpose, clear judgment, clear procedure, honesty in act and deed, love for the fellow man, and respect for God. Rizal affirms his faith in the power and good judgment of Filipino women. He believes that Asia is backward because Asian women are ignorant and slavish, whereas in Europe and America, quote, the women are free and well-educated and endowed with lucid intellect and a strong will, unquote. We know that Rizal admired German women who, quote, are active and somewhat masculine, not afraid of men, unquote, more concerned with the substance than with appearances, unquote. The figure of Teodora Alonso, the moralizing mother teacher, is not far behind. Ilustrado Ubris. In the letter of Rizal, Rizal refined and complicated the analysis of the political economy underlying the Malolos women's plight to a critique of the church-induced habitus of submission and self-abnegation. The reason for this is that in the colonial setup, the ideological propaganda apparatus of the church and its capillary agencies predominated over any liberal or reformist tendencies of the unstable secular civilian administration. His stress on individual resistance to authority distinguishes his concept of education as part of his essentially agnostic view of life conveyed to his nephew during his Dapitan exile. Quote, to live is to be among humans, and to be among humans is to struggle. But this struggle is not a brutal and material struggle with men alone. It is a struggle with them, with oneself, with their passions and one's own, with errors and preoccupations. It is an internal struggle with a smile on the lips and tears in the heart. On this battlefield, man has no better weapon than his intelligence, no other force but his heart. Sharpen, perfect, polish then your mind and fortify and educate your heart. Unquote. Self-discipline as enlightenment desideratum was also what he was trying to articulate in the letter, except that he was more preoccupied with altering the psychophysical disposition of the Filipino women, inured to passivity, obedience, and silence, which overdetermined the fates of Maria Clara, Huli, and Sisa. This accounts for the stress on a militarized sense of corporate honor, a warrior ethos distinguished by an ascetic regimen in fulfilling duty and obligations to the community, as if he was trying to convert the feminine habitus to a more competitive adversarial mode. It seems as though the entrepreneurial Rizal, who engaged in the abaca trade, complained of not earning enough as an eye doctor and played the lottery, was more preoccupied with inculcating the aristocratic virtues of the feudal nobility than the bourgeois ethos of regularity, thrift, and profit-calculating prudence. He was skipping the stage of hypocritical merchant capitalism, identified with a mercenary priesthood and a parasitic native bureaucracy, in favor of a utopian meritocratic arrangement allowing the intelligent some elite privileges while maintaining a semblance of aristocratic decorum. Although marginal to the plot of Donoli, in fact the whole chapter Elias and Salome was excised from the final version, the character of Salome displays more affinities with her Malolo sisters, given her relative control over her means of subsistence and isolation. With Elias's decision not to marry her in order to spare her the misery of a wretched family life, she plans to move to Mindoro and join her relatives. Living happily in the wilderness, desiring nothing but health to work, not envying the rich girls their wealth, Salome anticipates the nature deity Maria Makiling of Rizal's reconstituted folklore, the patria of the exiled hero. Salome implores the fugitive Elias to live in her home, quote, "It will make you remember me. When my thoughts go back to these shores, the memory of you and that of my home will present themselves together. Sleep where I have slept and dreamed. It would be as if I myself were living with you, as if I were at your side," unquote. The narrative conjures their togetherness, their marriage, their mutual belonging, in fantasy or compensatory wish fulfillment that is invariably women's mode of transcending their misfortune. What imbues space with sacramental import and historic significance is women's work, affection, care. Hence, Rizal's extreme anguish that mothers perform their nurturing, child-rearing task well. Envisioning the totality. On December 31, 1891, shortly after completing the Fili, Rizal wrote to Blumentritt that the reformist La Solidaridad is no longer his battlefield, but rather the Philippines. His family had suffered an irreversible catastrophe when they were evicted by the Dominican friars from the Calamba Hacienda the year before and his relatives persecuted. His sojourn in Hong Kong marks his definitive turn to a revolutionary solution for the colony. His epistolary political testaments dated June 20, 1892, and his founding of the La Liga Filipina on his arrival in Manila in June to July 1892 herald the beginning of CISA's and Huli's vengeance. All the victims of colonial tyranny are gathering for a covenant to exorcise the demonic plague. Rizal's own view of the integrative, pivotal years of his Dapitan exile may be discerned in the, quote, "structure of feeling," unquote, behind his statement to Father Pablo Pastels, quote, "I am at present at the enactment of my own work and taking part in it," unquote. A more historicized appraisal of Rizal in this age of terrorism would thus move the center of inquiry to the Dapitan years following the Hong Kong interlude. The contacts with plebeian proletarian strata interested the Liga and the Liga's resonance. By exposing the limits of Simon's romantic idealism and Padre Florentino's eschatological wish fulfillment, we move to engage more with the Sisa-Salome nexus in the carnivalous world of colonial Philippines deprived of any nomos or transcendental absolute authority. Rizal anticipates the postmodern predicament of the dissolution of a meaningful world in vacuous finance capitalism. Women's vengeance against patriarchal nihilism lies submerged in Rizal's communicative gesture to the Malolos contingent, potential cadres or partisans of the Katipunan-led revolution. This outreach mobilizes emergent and residual historical forces in a dialectical trajectory of canceling the negative, mystifying ideologies and practices, for instance, and salvaging the mother's body/place. This itinerary of changes provides a seismographic index for elucidating Rizal's radical critique, his theory of transforming patria and the regenerative delirium of its victims into a counter-hegemonic historic bloc, the matrix of all subversive insurgencies. We can sidetrack Simon's conspiracy in the Fili and focus instead on a utopian moment. In his annotations to Morga's Sucesos, Rizal's vindication of Filipino women's honor, reiterated in the letter, finds eloquent testimony. It is a return to the past before mother right was completely annulled when the self-sustaining security of the gens or clan had not completely yielded to the vulnerable, isolated, nuclear monogamous family dominated by the property-owning male. Women still participated in socially necessary labor. Sisa's horticultural knowledge is a survival. In the domestication of crops, before the complete dehumanization of mother-oriented communal ties in the subjugated colony. Because Filipino women are not a burden to the husband, she does not carry a dowry. Quote, "The husband does not take a heavy burden or the matrimonial yoke, but a companion to help him and to introduce thrift in the irregular life of a bachelor," unquote. Even though the Filipino women before the Spanish conquest represents a value for whose loss the possessor or parents must be compensated, she was never a burden on her parents or husband. European families, however, seem to be in a hurry to get rid of their marriageable daughters, with mothers frequently playing a ridiculous role in the sale of her daughter. The sale and purchase of Filipino women is not a custom in the past, according to Rizal's ethnological research. Quote, "The Tagalog wife is free and respected. She manages and contracts almost always with the husband's approval, who consults her about all his acts. She is the keeper of the money. She educates the children, half of whom belongs to her. She is not a Chinese woman or a Muslim slave who is bought sometimes from the parents, sometimes at the bazaar, in order to lock her up for the pleasure of the husband or master. She is not the European woman who marries, purchases the husband's liberty, initiative, her true dominion, being limited to reign over the salon to entertain guests and to sit at the right of her husband, unquote. Allowing for a certain overstatement in the position of women in pre-colonial times, it is accurate to state that in the communal stage of the barangay, the division of socially necessary labor and with it the specification of gender roles has not yet been affected by commodity production and the circulation of exchange values. To the degree that women participate integrally in productive work as well as with the reproductive labor of the household, they enjoy a measure of equality with men. As soon as private property becomes the dominant logic of the social order, male supremacy and monogamy prevail, supplemented by adultery and prostitution. When women are excluded from productive work and confined to kitchen and boudoir, their participation in politic and public affairs also ended. With a male partner absent or emasculated, Sisa and Salome enjoyed a latitude of activity, a degree of autonomy not shared by Maria Clara, Paulita Gomez, or Leonor Rivera. We may hypothesize that this is one of the reasons why Rizal found Josephine Bracken, whom he celebrated in his Ultimo Adios as Dulce Extranjera, a breath of fresh air. It was a temporary respite from the surveillance of the traditional mother and his female siblings. Even though she was obedient, meek, and did not answer back when Rizal lectured, she belonged to the European/Western race and was not averse to engaging in manual labor in Dapitan. Clearly, Rizal was not threatened by her as he was by Nelly Bosted, Gertrude Beckett, or the business-minded Viennese temptress. She was an orphan with, quote, nobody else in the world but me, unquote. In the hours before his death, Rizal wrote his family, asking forgiveness and requesting them to have pity on poor Josephine. After her marriage to Rizal and his execution, Josephine Bracken actively participated in the Revolutionary War led by General Emilio Aguinaldo, perhaps realizing a fragment of Rizal's image of those formidable Spartan mothers. Intervention from the Mountain, a millenarian project. Whatever the impact of contradictions undermined his life, Rizal never gave up amor patria, the most heroic and most sublime human sentiment, according to him. He celebrated this obsessive nostalgia for the homeland in his first propagandist contribution to Diaryong Tagalog, August 20, 1982. When he landed in Barcelona on his first sojourn in Europe. Rizal is rhapsodic in proclaiming his adoration for the motherland, which inheres in every human. Quote, she has been the universal cry of peace, of love, and glory, because she is in the hearts and minds of all men, and like the light enclosed in limpid crystal, she goes forth in the form of the most intense splendor, unquote. She is incarnate fantasy in the mythical figures associated with the natural surroundings, with the soil and rivers of the native land. And how strange, quote unquote. The poorer and more wretched she is, the more one is willing to suffer for her. The more she is adored, the more one finds pleasure in bearing up with her, unquote. Geographical space, the occupied territory, becomes a concrete lived place. It mutates into a libidinally charged locus of pleasure and self-sacrifice. When the motherland is in danger, the more intense the desire to come to her aid. The motherland symbolizes all those kin you have lost, the fountainhead of dreams, but also where, quote, true Christianity abides. Rizal finally identifies what he would later address in his farewell poem, Mi Patria Idolatrada, Dolor de Mis Dolores, Querida Filipinas, with cries on the night of his sorrow. Our sacrifices will revive the dying, suffering homeland. In the martyr's allegorical rendering, now taking the persona of Josephine Bracken, Mi Amiga, Mi Alegria, now that of Maria Makiling and her enchanting metamorphosis. It is instructive that Rizal, instead of dwelling on the didactic fable of Malakas and Maganda, co-opted by the hired publicists of the Marcos dictatorship, born together as a sign of gender parity, calls our attention to the legend of Maria Makiling, the nature goddess. While inhabiting the borderline between nature and civilization, she remained a virgin, quote, simple and mysterious like the spirit of the mountain, unquote. Initially, she favored humans with her grace and bountiful beauty, but when she was deceived by her lover, she took revenge. Rizal suggests that perhaps she was infuriated by the attempt of the Dominican friars, quote, to strip her of her domains, appropriating half of the mountain, unquote. The goddess scolded her human lover when he took another bride. Quote, inasmuch as you had not courage either to face a hard lot to defend your liberty and make yourself independent in the bosom of these mountains, inasmuch as you have no confidence in me, I, who would have protected you when your parents go, I deliver you to your fate, unquote. Since then, the goddess never again showed herself to humans, no matter how hard they searched for her, quote, along the famous ascent that the friars called Filibustera, according to Rizal. The harmony of humans and the world is sundered by predatory acquisitiveness, by the exploitation of nature to produce subsistence. So, quote, neither the enchanted palace nor the humble hut of Maria Makiling could be glimpsed, unquote. And so did Salome abandon her home in the forest. So did Sisa and Huli depart from the fallen world of Padre Camora, Padre Damaso, and Padre Salvi, of Doña Consolacion, the Alferes and Guardia Civil, the outposts of the crumbling Spanish Empire. In the 1892 Hong Kong letter, he declared, quote, I desire furthermore to let those who deny our patriotism see that we know how to die for our duty and for our convictions. What matters death if one dies for what is loved, for the country, and for the beings that are adored? Unquote. Sisa's vengeance arrives here with the martyr's call to the motherland to pay for, quote, our unhappy mothers who in bitter sorrow cried, unquote, rendering judgment on those condemned to languish in a world where slaves bow before the oppressor, where faith kills. Uncannily serendipitous, inhabiting the borderland between patriarchy and matrilineality, the surname Rizal is not found in the clan genealogy. It was given by an unnamed provincial governor to distinguish the Mercados of Calamba, a gratuitous addition which fulfilled in the ripeness of time its prophetic signification in designating, quote, a field where wheat, cut while still green, sprouts again. End of paper.